Hi, I'm David Wilcock, and you're watching Cosmic Disclosure. I'm here with my co-host, Corey Good, and as we saw in our first episode interview with the former aerospace engineer, William Tompkins, he is the consummate insider. We learned how spies discovered what the Germans had really been working on, including the invention of actual working flying saucers. In this episode, we're going to go even further into the life and times of William Tompkins. He's going to start out telling us about the secret think tank he was involved with while he was working with the Navy and dealing with the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal.
He's the Secretary of the Navy. He's sort of the top guy. And unlike many military organizations around the planet, everybody liked Forrestal. All of the people did. He was really a beautiful guy, and he knew what he was talking about. But his people were essentially like a short name, a name that was abbreviated. And so it had quite a few different titles to it. That group were essentially the apex of the alumni. So at Douglas, we had the situation where putting together packages on different areas that we were working on in the think tank. Now, other people in the tank were aware of who Forrestal was, and they were aware that we should not be using his group's name. But essentially, every document that we came up with inside that secret think tank, how will this be accepted by that group? Are we deviating from their agenda? What is their agenda? Who are all of these people? Is the Bilderberg involved in this? Are other organizations, secret organizations, are they involved in this? We then structured our presentations to them when he came out to assume Forrestal was the number one person in the country who ran the proper organization, the real organization to handle technically the extraterrestrial. We have now what essentially is the U.S. Navy Space Systems, which is not an organization, but it's inside of the secret think tank at Douglas. That operation was controlling everything in the country, and the President of the United States was not included. Top military people, congressmen, were not included. So here we are giving away the store to the people that are causing the problem. And I think this is hard for us to accept, but this is what was going on. We didn't know it, but that's what it appeared to be. In documents that I put together and several of the others that were submitted back to the Navy, I would make comments on essentially who does this information go to. This was a continuous problem in the secret think tank. Dr. Klemperer is a real nice guy, smart, brilliant, and you can kid with him. Okay, he's my boss. Klemperer was convinced that there were two different groups. There was the standard organizations, the Navy's levels of information, and then you got this other group up on top. And we know that the Admiral was heading that group up on top. He was the head of it. So we assumed after he was assassinated that that was then true because he then was talking too much. These are the complexities of the program where we're off by ourselves, not being influenced by anybody. We're coming up with what we think we're going to have to do to solve a unbelievable problem. And when you don't know who your boss is, you do the best you can.
What you're seeing here is very corroborating information with what so many others have been telling us over time about this mystery of how do they keep this stuff secret. People say, oh, the government can't keep a secret. They can't even find a file in a file cabinet. How could they keep these things secret? Well, Corey, when we're hearing about the guy who ultimately becomes the Secretary of Defense and was the first Secretary of Defense in America, Forrestal, and even he, they don't know who he's really working for. They don't know, yeah, he's the head of the Navy, he becomes the Secretary of Defense, but he mentioned this thing he called the alumni, and when I hear that, I'm thinking Illuminati.
That's a name that's been used for them before in the military.
You're saying alumni? They alumni. Actually use that word?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually means Illuminati.
Right. That was their name for it.
He also kind of dances around a code name for this group, but he doesn't say what it is. It appears to be MJ-12. Would you agree with that? That's what
yes.
he's talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever been in a situation where the people that you're working with don't know who they're reporting to or what their agenda really is?
That's the basic tool they use to keep people oblivious to what's going on. And it's everything is highly compartmentalized. Even on the vessel I was on, everything was compartmentalized.
Could you give me an example?
Well, there was a large area that was a bay that we would use for transportation, and everything was modular. So you would the bay would be this open, you'd push it all the way open, and then start building out laboratories or whatever else needed to be in there. Mm. And we would not, if I was working with a certain group of scientists, we would not have any idea what the other, just on the other side of the wall, going, you know, like right
in
next to each other.
Same research vessel.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. And they do things like they'll give a special access program the same name as a regular military program that's secret. So that if one of the programs names is thrown out there, they can say, oh, look, it's tied to this. This is a secret program, but it's not what you think it is.
He was tossing out some alphanumeric codes that were like alternative titles for this group. Is that commonly done? Is that kind of what you're talking about now?
Yeah. You give a group several different names, so it causes confusion if people start to talk about them. They'll be like, who? You know, well, I knew a group named this. It just adds to the confusion.
This compartmentalization that we're speaking of, do some of the people in some of these space program factions not even know that there are other factions?
Absolutely. Hardly any of them know about other factions. They will often know a little bit about less technological factions below them. A lot of them have come up through those. But they are not privy. If they see another craft, they're told that it's a concept craft for their program, not to speak about it
right.
to anyone.
Tompkins also described that this guy who supposedly is answering to this shadowy MJ-12 group ended up getting murdered. Now, that suggests that there is something nefarious going on. We know the term MJ-12 didn't even come into the public lexicon until the 1980s, thanks to William Moore, Stanton Friedman, who got this roll of 35mm film that had documents on it that up until then had never been available in public domain. Yet Tompkins clearly seems to have known about MJ-12, even though he didn't want to say the name on camera. Why do you think people are so afraid of these guys, and what do you think happened to Forrestal?
Well, Forrestal, it was reported in the smart glass pads, was one of the people that had been eliminated.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It said that in there.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know who the other people are. A lot of their names, I would have no base of reference.
Mm.
But yeah, they have a list of who was taken out in the name of national security or whatever.
And do they use that as an incentive for people to keep their mouth shut?
Yes. Because okay. everyone in the programs knows what happened, even though the general public is given a cover story.
So the implication is that no matter how highfalutin you think you are, how important you are, they'll snuff you like a candle the minute you step out of line.
Yep. Presidents, senators, it does not matter.
Well, that's a group you don't want to mess with. In the next clip here, we're going to be talking about Nordic secretaries and their role in helping to shape America's development of their own secret space program. Let's take a look.
I could never get my secretary to admit that she was a Nordic, okay? And everybody knew it, but she wouldn't accept. But from what she would drop into conversations, essentially, she was a part of the Nordic Navy, like a commander in intelligence with a mission to support a specific program, the Apollo program, and support all of it, not just first phase to go to the moon, but second phase to build Navy stations on all of the planets that were habitable or their moons in the solar system, and then build bases on all of the 12 closest stars. That was the Apollo mission. Now, the two girls in engineering, the two Nordics, never in any way of that 4 years came up with anything that would bother the mission to be accomplished. They were constantly pushing everybody to the side who were trying to stop the program from being implemented, cover it up, change information, do it wrong, everything, all the way through the 4 years. So we ended up, we roughly did 4 years, I roughly did 4 years in the Navy, and I roughly did slightly less than 4 years on Apollo. Now, part of my 4 years on Apollo was on Nova trucks, and the Nova trucks were like 8 times the size of the Apollo, 10 times the size, depending on what you were. And they were trucks to haul all of the facility equipment that we needed to build a 20,000-man Naval Station Research Center on the moon. That's what we were supposed to be doing. The mission to the moon was to build these facilities. And all we did was get to the moon, and some guys gave us the finger and told us, don't come back. Okay, go ahead and finish a couple of 3 more of your missions and don't come back. Well, these were the reptilians. So they were already there. We didn't know that. And essentially, we got stopped a third way through the missions. Now, the Nordic people, whether they're here for, and who are they? And we didn't learn until much later there's boxes full of Nordics. Okay, and we got a whole box full of them, like maybe 100 different types. We know now, but back then, we just thought of one. The two young ladies represented the Nordic civilization. And my girl turned out to be a Nordic Navy Lieutenant Commander with a specific contract and a specific mission to get the Apollo program implemented, the whole program. So you have to say that that group that she supported from out in the galaxy were the greatest thing that could happen to the planet. Never did she ever come up with anything that threw cold water on any part of the program. She was always way ahead of everybody with how to fix it. And she telepathically, continually, threw stuff in my head. Don't let them go that way. Bill, you know what we talked about. You gotta fix it. And I have to say, I never had any type of relationship with a person like her till I got over to North American and then over to TRW. And those girls also refused to say that they were Nordics. But they, again, were doing exactly the same thing as my secretary at Douglas on the Apollo. They were pushing. Those girls had two of them at North American. The one, I got into my secretary, administrative assistant in TRW. So there, again, you're getting support from an individual that is probably part of the Nordic Navy, implementing an agenda again. They were at war with the reptilians way out there. And Solar Warden, of course, was our portion of that war. And they were also at war with the insects, the praying mantis, people, if you want to call them that. And so we were fighting two of the really bad people. Collectively, we were going to be fighting with them, which the Nordics were already doing. And the Nordics had lost one massive battle between their planet and another planet, which the reptilians had, and restructured again, and then were back at war again. And we're talking about a whole lot of things that were elements in who are the Nordics. Who are these guys?
All right, now, this is getting very interesting because we're starting to cross over into a lot of the areas that you folks have said are the things that you want us to talk about the most. And so we're going to just tear right into this thing. Now, first of all, it was very interesting that he talked about the Apollo missions having phases and that only phase one was landing. He talked about them building trucks and that there was a separate launch site for these trucks and that their goal was to actually build these 20,000 person bases, first on the moon, then on other planets and their moons, and then 12 stars around our solar system. That's a lot of information, and I just want to get your take on that before we go into all the rest of it.
Yeah, I may actually have visited one of those.
One of what?
Those installations in another star system. Ah. When I was taken through the portal to that moon that was around this gas giant that I described.
Right.
So this could be one of those bases in one of the local 13 stars.
Now, he said that the reptilians told us to buzz off when we got to the moon and that on the overt level the Apollo missions were not continued, but it definitely appears on a covert level that they were, and this might be one area in which Tompkins and the intel that he got hasn't given him the full perspective on what really happened. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah, the information is always going to be skewed and elements redacted.
Now, he's talking about a Nordic Navy, and he gave us some very interesting information. It was a little awkwardly worded, maybe, for some, but he talked about there being a box of people, and that he said within the box, we ultimately found out that there were 100 different types of Nordics. Is that consistent with anything that you've heard?
The number isn't. I don't remember hearing that specific of a number, but yes, there were many different types categorized, and they were slightly different in size and stature. There was even one group that they were calling Nordics for a while, but they have the Nordic look, that they're about 8 feet tall, have a big forehead, and six fingers. And they were putting them in that category for a while. So, you know, that happens, just like there are tons of different beings out there that look similar to what we call the gray.
Now, he describes that these Nordics had a navy, and that the woman that was working with him as his secretary or administrative assistant when he goes over to TRW, that in either case, they had a command designation within that military structure. Is this consistent with anything that you've heard, that they have a sort of militarized structure to their organization?
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. Well, and also with the inner Earth groups I was interacting with, you know, seeing that, you know, their pilots that piloted the craft that we rode on to the Kuiper Belt and Venus, were very military type.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they said they have, you know, their military groups or scientific groups. They don't all mesh together.
Now, he describes a war that was being fought between the Nordics and the Reptilians. And I thought one of the really interesting things that he dropped on us was that there was a planet that the Nordics actually lost in this war, because apparently there was an adjacent planet controlled by the Reptilians, and they were fighting over this area. The Nordics lost that war and then had to regroup, and that apparently part of their regrouping was coming here and working with us.
That was probably one operation or mission out of their regrouping.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long has this war gone on? Has it been an ongoing war with the Nordics for, let's say, tens of thousands of years?
I really don't know how long they've been fighting, but I do know that there are wars out there that have been fought with the reptilians and their allies, and they've conquered planets. And one of the groups that works with the reptilians is a Nordic-looking being that I described earlier with the big forehead and the six fingers. And all the intelligence was that they were a conquered race that was forced to work.
All right, now let's get right down into this idea of Nordics actually appearing within the military-industrial complex and taking on essentially support jobs, but telepathically influencing people at those jobs. Is it possible that these Nordics could actually be doing this? Could they actually appear on Earth and get these jobs and get the security clearance necessary to be in these positions?
Yes. Yeah. There are a number of them living on the surface of the Earth right now, walking among us.
A number of them? Like, as in how many would you
say? I don't know. I mean, it's from different groups.
Okay.
Anshar told me of thousands of years ago, one of the factions within their conglomerate of groups was banished to the caverns towards the surface and the surface of the planet.
Really?
Yeah.
How would one of these Nordic men or women be able to get into such a highly compartmentalized, highly classified thing? Wouldn't our government or the military-industrial complex be highly afraid of them because of the possibility of them either deceiving us or bringing intel back to their own group and then weaponizing it against us?
Yeah, and after a while they found out that we were being deceived about some things that the Nordics or that we're calling them did for operational security. You know, there were definite some deceptions that were given to us. But for the most part, they were learning about the reptilian threat and the threat of their allies. And this group looks a lot like us. You know, basically it's like a cousin coming to help a cousin.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, yeah. But these people presented themselves as wanting us to get rid of our nukes, wanting us to become more loving and peaceful. And they did not see as big of a threat from them as they did their enemy, the
right.
Reptilian groups.
One of the things that Tompkins is going into that's different from what you've said is he seems to be portraying these Nordics, at least in this part of the interview, as being essentially from outer space, from other worlds. So what do you think is really going on here? Is this...
Well, it's a mixture.
Okay.
So I don't know what group he was in contact with. He could very well have been in contact with a non-terrestrial group.
Okay.
But the groups that I had contact with that fit this description claim to be created on this planet naturally, and that this is their home.
Now, Corey, I want to get into something that's a really sensitive personal thing for you, and that everybody who's watched the show, it's their favorite episode, and that is when you had this mind meld with Kari, the priestess of the inner earth, and you reach out your hands to her hands, she offered you some kind of beverage that you declined. You didn't want to drink the drink.
The elixir of Isis.
Let's just talk a little bit about what she showed you, and does that corroborate in any way with what Tompkins just told us in this interview?
Yes, and she was connecting with me to focus on one small period in my youth. And as we regressed in the mind meld to that time, I was seeing her life too throughout the same time periods,
right.
You know, or her age that matched mine. And one of the things that I saw was a series of meetings that she had with military types. The suits looked, the material looked 40s, 50s era, and she was speaking with Russians, with English, Canadian, United States representatives of the military.
Wow.
And assisting them. And they said that they assist them psychically. They assist them with some technology. So, yeah, there's definitely some crossovers.
All right, so now we're going to have another clip for you, and this is getting into some really interesting stuff in which Tompkins is going to be describing his own experience of understanding that abductions are taking place, and we're also going to hear him describing what he knows personally about the inner Earth. And this stuff absolutely blew my mind because, Corey, there were some things he says here we're going to see that even go farther than what you've said to me before, and it rocked my world. So check it out. You're going to love this.
A lot of people have been abducted for years, and a lot of them are still being abducted. But we're into a situation where, what do we do now? How do we fix this? What are all the things we have to do to fix it? There are ancient extraterrestrial facility people, if you want to call them that, who have been living underground in massive caverns for thousands of years. The Earth itself is almost a honeycomb. It has millions of massive caverns. We look at the little caverns that they have over in New Mexico, and everybody goes there and they look at the cavern. They've looked at the entrance of a guy's office. That's all they looked at. When we're talking caverns, earthwise, one of the caverns in Southern California goes way past into Oregon, and it goes east into Nevada, and it's one cavern, and there's caverns inside that cavern. There's caverns inside of caverns, not just tunnels, but there's bubble caverns inside of caverns, and some caverns are only a couple of miles long, but we are honeycombed. And so these extraterrestrials came here, some of them before Nova built the raft, and some of them came after he built the raft, after the flood. But then there's been seven flood kinds of things that have happened here. We forget about that. My Uncle Walter had specifics of seven times when they took place. One was a situation where we had earthquakes on a continuous basis from Alaska to the South Pole, all at the same time, split the thing wide open. And so that caused all kinds of floods. And so, yes, we have extraterrestrials here on the planet that are not just living in caverns. They have cities there. They have industry there. They have entertainment there. They have essentially, maybe not like us, but they have essentially a full life there. They're born, they work, and they step out of the picture. And some of them have ridiculous short lives like humans. Others have in-betweens, living 2,000 or 3,000. Others don't stop living, period. And these people sort of live together in the different caverns, but obviously with totally different agendas, totally different lives, and different missions. Now, the Air Force got involved in this, and so they built their diggers, which are about half a mile long, and they'll dig a hole. It'll be 100 foot in diameter. And we have trains throughout the United States, all over the country, even connecting to Nova Scotia, and some of them connecting to other countries locally in this particular hemisphere. But the extraterrestrial tunnels are like 300 feet and close to 400 feet. And these tunnels, the tunnel diggers dig at 2 to 3 miles an hour, and they reduce all of the rock, all of the material, everything down to microscopic material, and they spray it on the lining of the tunnel, which then turns to be almost glass, which then is electrically excited and becomes a lighted tunnel. And these guys are running there 2 miles an hour operating this tunnel, which then has subsonic vehicles operating on rail that don't leave the rail all over the planet, not just from Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon to the Air Force facilities at Vandenberg. And so we've run into their tunnels digging ours, and we get not too graciously suggested to take another route. And like in New Mexico, we have a large facility there, and we've had wars with some of the extraterrestrials that are there, and wars with our military people, and light skirmishes continually. But then our people that are taken from their university laboratory to that facility, they get taken pretty fast. Like in 1 second, they're there, and they take them inside, and they let them continue that particular research that they were doing at the university, except that now they are a slave. They're not a business associate. They are a slave. So now we got slavery going in these caverns all over your planet. But then that's not such a big deal, because out in the galaxy, the different extraterrestrials, they do the same thing. And they take the good guys and they abduct them, take them to their facilities on their planet, or they take them down underground of their original planet, and they do the same thing. So, again, we don't have just Earth as a laboratory. We have billions of laboratories on billions of stars out in the galaxy doing the same thing. We're really low on the totem pole, unfortunately.
Okay, you saw it, I saw it, Corey saw it. This just happened. This is something that we are not fooling you. This is not a joke, okay? Tompkins is real. I've interviewed him a bunch of times now. And Corey, how does it feel to see this stunning body of corroboration for everything that you've been telling us?
It's amazing.
He described the people inside the Earth as extraterrestrials. And he said that there are different types of lifespans, some of which live very short lives like ours, some of which live longer, and he said some of which live essentially indefinitely. So let's just get your feedback first on that statement about them being extraterrestrials.
Well, I would agree that a very large contingent of extraterrestrials, many different types, have what we called embassies in caverns all across the planet. But as I've given in my testimony, I recently had contact with a group, inner Earth group, that claimed to have developed on this planet, which would not make them non-terrestrials.
Right. So some of these people may in fact be indigenous to Earth. It's just that they have evolved or they developed in these inner Earth areas.
Right.
Okay, now another thing that I really was taken aback by that caused me shock when I saw this was his statement that there are millions of caverns. And then he actually used the word honeycomb. Now I just want to clarify for everybody watching that he was not prompted with your testimony. He never heard you refer to it as the honeycomb Earth. You had not seen the Law of One, which also refers to it as a honeycomb Earth. So we have three independent sources now, all documented, in addition to others who have mentioned it that way to me privately, other insiders that don't want to come forward. So let's just start with that. Would you agree that there are, in fact, millions of caverns inside the Earth?
Yes, yes. It's the way the Earth developed, there was, I think, similar to like a vascular system going through it. And as it cooled off, you know, of molten rock, and as it cooled off and it formed all kinds of caverns. And then the tectonic activity on the Earth, as crazy as it is, has created those as well.
Hmm. Now, we had some people write comments on an article I wrote recently talking about the inner Earth where they didn't understand why those caverns would be safe from things like giant earthquakes on the surface of the Earth.
Right. These are down towards more below, further down in the crust than most of the fault lines, except for the deepest fault lines.
Oh.
And then they do not normally, depending on their level of technological development, thus, you know, different non-terrestrials that live different ages, you know, they're in different stages of development.
Right.
You know, some of the higher technological groups, it would not be as difficult for them to live close to fault lines. But, yeah, most of this is very deep, you know, in the 20, 40-mile range of the crust.
And right. So an earthquake's only going to jiggle up near the surface, and the shakes aren't even going to make it down that far.
The whole thing. Shock waves travel through the rock in both directions. But a lot of them, of the more technologically developed groups, have technology to mitigate that.
Oh, like shock absorbers, basically.
Yeah, sort of.
Something like that.
Energetic.
Now, he also said, I just want to get your raw comment on this without interjecting my opinion. He mentioned a cavern that goes from California up past Oregon and then all the way over to Nevada that he says is one single contiguous cavern.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty shocking statement. What's your response to that?
Well, I've talked a little bit about the same cavern system. Part of it, we have submarines going in and out, going far inland into the United States, popping up in lakes.
Okay, so some of these caverns are not hollow and filled with air. They're going to have seawater in them some cases.
It's a mixture. Depends on how the cavern is sealed off, how the cavern runs as opposed to a cavern that's right next to it. So a lot of the times they'll have one area that's water that they'll have submarines in. They've dug through to another cavern area that is somewhat pressurized naturally, keeps the water out, and build out facilities.
All right, so another really disturbing aspect of this clip that we just saw is him describing what appears to be a variety of different types of slavery going on. He describes slavery inside the Earth, humans being taken to other solar systems. And you've covered on this in other episodes, and you also did it with George Norrie on Beyond Belief here on Gaia. But could you touch on some of your feelings about his sentiments about the slave trade?
Yes, and he's either only reporting a small amount because it's so disturbing, or that's all he was briefed on. Yeah, but he was touching on the abduction scenario he touched on, but the people disappearing off the planet that, you know, that are just being abducted, that during a certain time period we're being abducted by non-terrestrials and we're being taken outside of our star system for a slave trade. later on, we decided, hey, this is a commodity, we being the cabal type groups, and they started obtaining and trading humans for technology and biological material.
So what can we do about this slave trade? It's a very disturbing thing for people. I can understand they might feel powerless. Is there anything that we can do to try to bring this to a halt and get freedom to happen for people on Earth?
Well, on our end, the most we can do is make people aware that it exists. You can't tackle a problem unless you're aware there is a problem. And everyone's asleep. They've been mind controlled. And this information is going to be very disturbing and very hard to accept for many of these people.
Right.
But to mitigate it, what people can do on this end is mainly just educate themselves and others about it. So when this information does come out, you know, people won't, you know, lay in bed and suck their thumbs.
Now, you also mentioned some messages the Blue Avians gave you regarding what will happen to people who have been kept as slaves as we go through this shift and the Draco have been defeated. And I believe this concerns certain breakaway groups.
Right. And there are some non-terrestrial groups and a couple breakaway groups that are assisting in this. The infiltrators that infiltrated the program, the Galactic Slave Trade Program, started putting tracking markers on their victims so that they could later track them down to wherever they went, no matter where in the galaxy or other galaxies, and send their allies in to retrieve them. And then after they've been retrieved, they're in all different psychological states from what they've been through. And the ancient Mayan group has been helping a lot of them recover and heal on one of their planets.
So, in short, do you think that as we get this breakdown of the negative, the Draco being defeated, as we've discussed in other episodes, that there will be a widespread rescue and salvage operation for these people that have been brought into slavery?
That's already has been ongoing.
Okay. So it's just important for people to hear then that something is being done, and a lot of these people who might be enslaved now will be able to be freed as we go through this change.
Yes, and once they go through all the healing, they'll be returned to our society, whatever state it's in at that time.
Wow. All right, well, this has been really fascinating. I want to thank you for watching our show. This is certainly mind-blowing after all this time. People say, oh, Corey has no validation. Well, what you've just seen here is a game changer. And I encourage you to tell everybody you know about this, because now that we're bringing this all together, maybe a lot of people who wouldn't have taken this seriously before are going to take a second look. And we do need your help. We need as many people as possible to educate themselves about this. As Corey just said, it's vital to humanity's future that we no longer act as ostriches, that we have the awareness of what's really going on. This is Cosmic Disclosure. I'm here with Corey Good and William Tompkins. I'm your host, David Wilcock, and I thank you for watching.